the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Okay, welcome back. That's right, a lot of stuff to get to, and your phone calls are straight ahead. It's another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing. We welcome you back. Professor Plum here with me, Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group, answering your money questions, and we're going to get right into this hour's strategy session, okay, which obviously includes your phone calls. A lot of topics on the table, anything that's on your mind. Phone calls, emails coming right up, so you want to keep it right here for the best in money information, covering what you need to know about money and money strategies. So, phone lines are open. Emails, if you want to send those to us, we'll do those this hour. You go to the Find Your Answer link at our website, wealthed.com. But we do take phone calls first on this show. So if you need your question answered right away, as we have some folks on hold, they're going to do that. 877-PLANNER is our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. That's our phone line here in the studio, 877-752-6637. You can also get in touch with the Brain Trust off the air any time of the day, nearly. Number there, 800-644-1150. I can say it again, you need a personalized bucket strategy, one we've been talking about, one that's designed with your goals and your individual needs in mind. Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group are standing by to talk to you. Again, 800-644-1150. You can get an appointment with the Brain Trust advisor and get yourself a bucket strategy. Okay, again, our number on the air, 877-PLANNER. P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Taking your calls first. If you're on hold, don't go away. We will get to everybody. Margaret is hanging on in Denver, Colorado with a question or two. Hi, Margaret. How can we help you today?
Hi. So this is my quick story. I was let go by a company for which I worked for a very long time, 18 years, and I ended up with a small pension. So I have a decision to make within a few months. And I wanted to take the lump sum out of it, get it out of there as soon as I can. But I found that I would have to be 55 years old in the year of when my employment terminated in order to avoid the 10% penalty on top of the tax if I took this money out as a lump sum. And unfortunately, I was 2 months short of being 55 when I was let go. Question is this, since I was this close to this threshold, is there any provisions whatsoever to make this penalty lesser or to prorate it or somehow, or maybe even some way to just...
Margaret, when did this take place? How long ago? Or are you in the middle of making this decision now?
Yes, I am in the middle of making the decision now. I have another month to decide.
Okay, and so you were let go last year, last December?
I was let go in October of 2015, which is just 4 months ago, and I had 180 days, I believe, so that would several months to decide on the pension plan. So I have a deadline until
okay,
the end of March.
Okay, Margaret, when did you turn 55?
In January this year.
Oh, okay, so it is a different tax year.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you can look at the lump sum versus the monthly payments, and you can take a distribution from an IRA if it's structured and then not have to pay the penalty. Mm-hmm. But we want to look at the lump sum versus the monthly payment. What is the monthly payment they will give you from the pension versus the lump sum?
So the monthly payment right now, if I started drawing from it right now, it's very small. It's just something under $400. And then, of course, if I wait until I'm 65...
When do you need to start taking it? Do you need to start...
When do I need it? I don't know. I'm looking for a job as we speak, so I'm not really sure, what the future holds. But what I wanted to do, have an option of taking a lump sum, maybe putting it towards my own business of some sort, a small business.
Unfortunately, you're going to pay a penalty if you do that.
Because I was short. I was not 55 at the time.
The only way to get the money out of there at this time is to take a structured payment for basically your lifetime. You can change it at 60 years of age once you've done it for 5 years. But... You can do what you want to do. You can't take a lump sum, though, because it will be penalized. You're not going to be 59 and a half for a little while. So now it's a matter of sitting back and saying, okay, I've got this chunk of money. I think you said it was like $189,000. If I turn the income on right now, it's only $400 a month, $4,800, call it $5,000 a year. That's not a very good payout. Given those two options, I'm going to take the lump sum, or recommend that you take the lump sum. And if you need an income from it of $400 a month or whatever it is, do a 72T, structure the payment, get the money out that you would have gotten anyway, but have the ability to invest and change that income later on in time and be able to actually earn some money on it. It's not a very good lump sum for at 55 years of age. Now, but taking a big lump sum out of it, you're going to pay a penalty if you take a lump sum out and want to start a business. There's no way around that on the on the penalties.
Hey, listen, Mark, I got to get to a couple of calls. If you want some more information on this, hold on. And Professor Plum can talk to you more about it off the air and give you a little bit more detail on this.
Unless she can get him to hire her back for a couple of months, then let her go again.
Well, see, and
now she's 55.
Okay, thanks. And the problem is that she's, you know, there's a rule, a law, whatever, that says you can access the money from the retirement plan of the company you're with if you terminate employment in the year that you turn age 55.
Right.
Now, she was terminated in January.
She was terminated in October of 15.
Oh, but that's right.
She turned 55 in January of 16.
That's what I meant.
She was not 55 at any time during the year that she was let go.
And that's creating the problems.
That's creating the issue that she now has to be 59 and a half to take money out of her 401k, her IRAs, without a penalty, unless she does a structured payment, 72T.
Okay. 877-PLANNER. Margaret, hold on if you need some more help. Sam, hang on or give us a call back. We're going to go to Ron next in Minneapolis. Hello, Ron.
Good afternoon.
How can we help you today?
I have a question about reducing my income, similar to a person that called earlier. First of all, I want to say thank you to you guys. You have a great show. I listen to you as often as I can.
Thank you.
My situation is as follows. I am retired, 68 years old, and unfortunately, as the other person has said, my income is over $170,000 a year. It's actually about $175,000. However, some of my income, about $75,000 of it, came from the sale of non-qualified stock options. I received a W-2 from my previous employer with the income from these stock options, with box 12A checked as a V Victor, indicating it was from non-qualified stock options. So since I do not work, but I received this income and it reported on a W-2, am I allowed to contribute to my IRA $6,000, because I'm over 50, and thus reduce my income on line 37 of my 1040 and bring my income below the 170? Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. You've got a W-2, which generally means earned income. And this is a form of earned income, but it's a deferred income. You haven't worked for a little while. I mean, you didn't work through December of last year, did you?
That's correct. These grants were made back in like 2007.
Yeah, but when did you leave employment?
I left employment in 2009.
Right, and so the IRS knows that too. This is going to show up as a deferred income, not a current earned income, and it does require current earned income to support an IRA contribution. So unfortunately, this is not going to support an IRA contribution.
Even though it is income.
It's income.
It's earned income, W-2 type income, but it has to be current, you're saying.
But just like a deferred compensation plan where I defer my income and then I receive a W-2 income after I retire from my deferred comp plan, it's a deferred income. Deferred income doesn't count. Only current income counts to support an IRA contribution. And he has not had any current. Technically, he earned this money when he was working.
Yeah,
I mean, he received this payout because of the work he did X number of years ago, not the work he did this year or last year.
But is it considered a payout? Because when I received it as a grant of stock options, but the options weren't exercised until 2015.
Right. Well, I understand what's happening, but it is not going to support an IRA contribution.
Okay.
Based on the definition of what you can contribute to an IRA, is what
he does not have earned income. They code it the way that they're coding it for a reason. If it had happened during the year you were working, that's a different issue. But unfortunately,
that's why the V in box 12A is coded that way, I guess, Ron.
Okay, so the IRS looks at that V and basically says this isn't earned income and would deflect.
They want to see a current employment situation.
Okay.
In order
right.
to make
well,
the
thank you so much.
Ron, thank you for the call. Wish we had better news, but
I'm trying to think of some other way. Unfortunately, it was for last year too. He's trying to get his,
right.
and he's trying to get away from the extra premium on the Medicare that a retiree may be subject to if they make more than certain income thresholds. Married individual, if they make more than $170,000, they have a higher premium on Medicare than somebody who doesn't. And he's only got to reduce it by like $5,000 to be able to get it under the wire.
Yeah.
But we're after the year too, so there's nothing we can really do except for an IRA contribution.
And it may be that he pays a little bit more for the year, and then, you know, maybe next year it'll be lower. Okay. Ron, thank you for the call. Sam in Seattle, don't go away. We're going to talk to you as soon as we come back. 877-PLANNER. Two lines open now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum on Bucket Strategy Investing. Market Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, here for you every day at the same time. Radio, TV, internet, whatever you want. You cannot escape us. Well, I suppose you could. We'll tell you where the Brain Trust is going to be hanging out in just a little while here, but we want to get back to your phones, phone calls, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. If you have a money question, 877-752-6637. We also have a couple of emails on these guaranteed lifetime income annuities. We got those in within the hour, so we're going to cover those sometime before the top of the hour as we continue our discussion of lifetime income. But back to the phone lines. Sam has come back in Seattle, Washington. Sam, thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say thank you. I've attended many of those seminars on those annuities, and they were so confusing. They're still a little confusing, but you're bringing some light to what's going on.
Well, that's good. Whatever we can do for you, we'll be happy to help you out.
But the main question I have is, if I hit my IRA, Roth IRAs, and my regular account and only take dividends and interest, that would be adequate, plus Social Security, that would be adequate for me to live. Is that wrong in thinking that? The IRA and the Roth, I'm not collecting Social Security for another year.
Okay.
Right now, I'm kind of retired. I'm living on my savings.
Okay.
And I want to stay below, I know you just spoke about it, below the Medicare thing, under 7,000 or something like that.
Are you single or married?
Single.
85,000.
Pardon?
85,000.
85, then I'm fine then. Okay.
Okay. So you
that's
won't
I
pay
want to stay below, and that would put me right, you know, right where I want to be.
Okay.
And
so
is
the
that
question is
wrong to think about taking from the Roth and the regular IRA without, I mean, I know I'm going to have to take them at RMD time, but
oh no, blending your income from different taxable sources or taxation sources can make a lot of sense. So you may want to focus on doing it so that you pull more out of the traditional IRA now, just up to the point where you get close to that $85,000 number, and maybe less out of the Roths now. Try to bring the IRA down between now and when you turn 70 and a half and have required minimum distributions, and then balance them up. But no, blending the distributions from the different accounts, taking some taxable, tax-free, to get the income that you need, but stay in the tax bracket that you want to stay in without jumping up into another area, either because of the Medicare premium, because of, you know, pick your poison in the tax code, right? So
blending it
makes a lot of sense. Now, whether I would do just dividends and live off the dividends, that's an investment decision. I happen to like reinvesting dividends because anything that has a dividend to it typically has some volatility to it. And while the dividends can change, they typically stay relatively stable. And I want that dollar cost averaging aspect of the dividend. I like the idea of growing the dividend through dividend reinvestment in this area rather than living on the dividend and wondering if they'll ever cut it on me. So that's just a philosophy of investment side of it. But from a tax standpoint side of it, blending your buckets makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because the issue is I think I've hit enough. I mean, even if I had to hit principal, it would not be an issue.
Yeah. I mean, so how you set up your investments is how you set up. I might do it a little differently, but the main question here is how would you set up the taxable distributions or non-taxable distributions? And blending it, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much for the great show.
No problem, Sam. Although I do disagree with you on the way you're setting up your investments, you're doing the taxes fairly well, I think.
Okay, thank you.
Sam, thank you for the call. Okay, so explain what it is, because this is an important aspect of planning here. First of all, what he wants to do, all right?
Well, a lot of people say never touch your IRAs until you're forced to take it at age 70 and a half. And some people, then the other, they'll say also, well, don't ever touch your Roth IRAs because they're tax-free. You want to let them grow as much as possible tax-free, which means that you have to live on your personal money. But living on personal money may create very little taxes. Isn't that a goal? Creating almost no taxes? And so if I needed $50,000 a year and I had $500,000 in the bank account, how much is that actually earning? I'm pulling $50 out of it, but I'm not paying any taxes because the $50 I'm pulling is all tax-free. That keeps me in a very low tax bracket. But if I've also got another $1 million in my IRA and it's going to grow for another several years, then when I hit the required minimum distribution age, it's just going to create a very large taxable event. So I'm going to go from very little for the next 3, 4, or 5 years to a high tax for the rest of my life. So a better choice would be to, as I mentioned, blend the income streams. Take some money from my personal account. Take some money from my IRA. Actually pay taxes on my IRA today, especially if I can get it done at a lower tax bracket, then I'll pay it later. And if I still need some income over the top of those, taking money out of a Roth IRA makes a lot of sense, especially if I've had it for 5 years. I don't have to do any accounting at that point, but it'll be tax-free. So having all these different sources of income, I can have maybe $100,000, $150,000 in his case, $120,000 of income from these different sources, but only have a taxable income of, or adjusted gross income of $85,000, $80,000 because the Roth wasn't taxable, the principal from the personal account wasn't taxable. So cash flow and taxation are different issues. And we want to be able to manage those areas. Now, Sam was smart enough, lucky enough, however you want to put it, to create different types of money. Different pools of accounts.
Asset location.
And having the different areas. IRA money, Roth money, personal money. Some people ask me, what is the best investment for my Roth IRA? Well, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. And the standard answer would be either something that grows the best over a long time frame, if you have the time frame available to leave it alone for a long time frame, or for a lot of retirees, one of the best investments for a Roth IRA is the highest income generator. Obviously, we're looking at risk return relationships, but that would otherwise be taxable, but that creates a tax-free income. So, if you've got something that pays a high taxable income that may be kind of not pretty when you get done paying the taxes, but you can turn it into tax-free because you bought it inside your Roth, that's a great way to go. So if I can get a large tax-free income from my Roth and then take a distribution from my IRA, I'm blending and I have a great cash flow but less in taxes.
Now that requires, though, because we've heard over and over for many people, just defer, as you said, just defer. Don't take anything out. Don't pay taxes now. This will require you to pay a little bit in taxes now, more than you would if you just deferred all of your income. But at the same time,
a lot less in the future.
It's going to save you after age 70 and a half.
Most people should not just defer indiscriminately without paying attention to what's going on with their life before required minimum distribution age. Now, I did say most, I didn't say everybody. There is no everything works this way and everybody should do it that way. We're all different. We all have different income streams. We all have different needs. We all have different income sources, different capital sources, IRA, Roth, personal. And it's all very individualistic. But most people, very rarely does it make sense to just ignore your IRA and not touch it any time sooner than the required minimum distribution mandates. Typically, the only people that have that going on are people that have relatively small IRAs or people that have so much direct income and they don't have a huge life expectancy, but they just don't care about what the heirs are going to pay. And so that's just not the majority of people. Most people, the other ones are the people that work at a high wage through age 70. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it helps to keep in mind that the required distributions that you're gonna be taking out of your IRA once you hit age 70 and a half, those are all taxed at ordinary income rates. And by the way, it adds to your income, which, by the way, can also subject more of your Social Security to taxation, creating an even higher tax bill, which is why we like to try to keep those required minimum distributions down, if possible. 877-PLANNER. Lines open now. Give us a call. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. So it's a Beatle hour now. Cool. I recognize themes, you know what I mean? I think this is on the Beatles 6 album. These are not, the last two songs we played have not been Beatle originals. They were covers, this one and Money.
Were they desperate for money? They had to cover what, they run out of ideas and they didn't have anything else
to
write?
No, actually the original version of Money just is just awesome. That bass line is great. Anyway, okay, what does that have to do with the retirement income strategies workshops? Probably nothing, but I'm gonna, I don't do transitional material. You might have noticed.
Really?
Yes. The 2016 retirement income. I was talking Beatles. Now we're talking workshops, okay? 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop. This is important stuff, folks, and it's why we've talked about what we've talked about today for a good portion of the day. Presented by Lucia Capital Group, it's all about understanding where your retirement income comes from, making sure that you don't potentially run out of money before you potentially run out of time. We all run out of time. We don't want to run out of money. The next one happens this Saturday. It's already here, this Saturday in Las Vegas, Nevada. So if you haven't signed up, do so now. You go to Wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com, our website. Sign up there at the live events tab. Just put your name in. It's free. We just want to know how many people are going to be showing up, how many chairs to put out there. Las Vegas this Saturday. A week from Saturday, it happens to be Seattle, Washington. And then a couple of Saturdays after that, Phoenix, Arizona. After Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, there will be more. You check wealthed.com for that schedule. We'll tell you more as the cities, as we get closer to the actual dates. But mark it down. If you're listening to us or watching us, there's a really good chance that we're going to be there somewhere near you. So Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three, wealthed.com. Or you can just give us a call right here, either at 877-PLANNER or our off-air number, 644-1150, 800. Okay, you got all that? That's enough information for you. If you have any questions, just email us, which, by the way, you can do at wealthed.com. In fact, we were talking, speaking of these guaranteed income, a lot of what we talked about, Professor Plum, had to do with these guaranteed income annuities, guaranteed withdrawal benefit annuities, and sort of buying your own pension. I want to get to a couple of emails that we had concerning this on this discussion. One came in about a half hour or so ago from Gus in Texas, and he says this: regarding indexed annuities with guaranteed lifetime income as a part of retirement income, we are age 71, retiring in 2 years. If we start the lifetime guaranteed income on such an annuity for 25% of our income, is this efficient? Or does this approach require more time to build up the annuity? First of all, what is he asking here?
Well, because the insurance company has made it look like that the only way these contracts really work is if you leave them alone for 5 or 10 years to build up that income base. A lot of people don't think that they are good to buy and start the income right away. That's not the case. They can work where you buy them and start the income a year or two later, like he's trying to do. Where I have an issue with this case is that he's 71 now. His wife is 71. They're not going to start the income until they're 73. I'd want to see what the payout is at 73, because remember, you're only receiving your own income back for the first period of time. And if the payout is only, call it a 6% payout, maybe it's 7. Let's say it's 7. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. That means that they're only going to get their own money back for the first 14, a little over 14 years. So they've got to make it to about 87. One of them has to live to be at least 87 before there's basically any return at all on that guarantee. And so there is an age limit. Unfortunately, the older we get, the less likely we are for being a candidate for a lifetime income rider. I mentioned earlier when we were talking about them, longevity is a key. How long will that payout last? And if you're starting it at 73 and it takes 14 years just to get your own money back, that means 87 years of age before you start getting any real return on your money, and you got to live a long time to get a reasonable rate of return. Now, if his parents are still alive, her parents, one of the kids, and everybody's healthy, and you think that you're going to make it to 100, high likelihood, now they're starting to make a little more sense. But there is a time period where you're getting a little bit too old. I hate to say it that way, to really use these products effectively. So there may be better ways to do what you're trying to do, unless you tell me that longevity is a key or return is not an issue. All I want is to know that that check is coming in the first of the month, whatever day of the month it's set up to come in, and I don't ever have to worry about where the money's coming from. I want to know that it's there. If that's the overriding ultimate concern, then fine. This one works fine. But if there's a return component to it as well, and longevity is only slightly better than life expectancy, normal life expectancy, this isn't that good of a contract.
Yeah, so what you're really doing is you're handing a chunk of money over to the insurance company, and you're saying, pay me back. Give me some of this.
Give me a little interest on it every year, but pay me my money every year until you get rid of my money.
Exactly.
And then promise to continue to pay me even after my money is gone.
Right, and it's almost like we're making a bet. The insurance company says, okay, well, what happens if you go away and there's still some money left over? You have a choice. You could say, well, you insurance company, you can keep it.
That's an immediate annuity.
That's an immediate annuity, and that's where. But if you're going to keep it, maybe I get a little bit more.
Right. There's a give and take on everything.
Exactly. But if I go before the income is used,
The cash value that's left goes to the ultimate heirs.
Right. And so the insurance company says, well, we can do that, but we're not going to give you nearly as much right now because we want to go out and earn some. Because now the insurance company will take your money, and they're going to go out and earn something on it. They're going to put it to work, right?
They've got to reserve a certain amount for the guarantees and all that.
Right.
But with an index annuity, what the insurance company does is they take a large portion of it, put it into their fixed account that gives them a particular rate of return, and they take part of the money and they buy options on the index that they're basically going to create the interest for your account. And if the index doesn't go up, the options expire worthless. If the index goes up, they make money, and that gives them the money they can pay on your account, and they can get very good rates of return with small amounts of money playing the options game.
Mm-hmm.
But they also can get a lot better pricing than you and I can get because they're dealing with a few dollars more than you and I are probably dealing with individually, millions of dollars at a time. So do they work? It all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. I think that at 73, 74 years of age, just starting the income at that point, unless you have great, great longevity, or you just don't care about the return, you just care about the income. And to be honest, if you don't care about the return, all you care about is the income, you could do better with a single premium immediate annuity.
Because they're going to pay you.
They're going to pay you more.
They're going to pay you more. Now, you can get those SPIAs, single premium immediate annuities, and have them continue for both you
and
your
spouse,
right?
You can get a joint life. And most of those are going to pay you more than the guarantee. And just for the reason you said, the insurance company's not on the hook as much. They keep whatever you don't get to get, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And again, especially on this, because the person is older, if they get to keep what you don't receive, their trade-off is that they're going to give you a greater
payout
because they don't expect you to live as long. Now, would you say there's sort of they're in their 70s, their early 70s.
And they don't need to start it for two more years.
Until 73, assuming they do this right when they retire. Would you say that there's sort of a sweet spot for as far as ages go?
For the withdrawal benefit annuities?
Yeah.
The sweetest spot to start the income is between 65 and 70. Typically, I think, unless they somehow, and not many of them do this anymore, ramp up the payout rate dramatically after 70, they're still going to be in the 5-6% range, which is not ramped up enough. That's where the sweet spot is to start the income. The sweet spot to start the contract with the automatic escalators and roll-ups is sometime after 55.
And allow it to grow.
And allow it to step up and grow and roll up to maybe 10 years. Unfortunately, I've seen these products sold to 35-year-olds. They don't need the guaranteed income in an IRA with a 35-year-old. They need growth. They don't need the draw, the drop down of the 1% fee for this rider that they're not going to use for 20, 30 years.
Because they got time.
They've got time on their sides, but that doesn't mean that people don't sell it to them. So the sweet spot to buy it is 55 to 65. The sweet spot to turn it on is 65 to 70. And unfortunately, again, I've seen them sold to 75 and 80-year-olds and told, let's wait and let these things grow.
So at age 90, you're going to start getting an income from this, and you're
going to
get your own
money
back for 20 years.
Yeah, for 20 years. And so you got to make it to 110.
Just to get your money back.
It may not be quite bad.
I would assume
that's exaggerated. But
if you're 90, you're going to get your money back a little bit more quickly. I assume for a 90-year-old, they're going to pay you out a decent amount.
Well, that's an assumption. How correct? Well, decent is a relative term.
Of course, it's a relative
term.
Does
it make it a good investment?
No.
No, not from that standpoint. It's a 90-year-old is too old to turn it on.
One of the factors in this is you got to live a long time, because the longer you live,
that's when you get to the insurance company's money.
You start living on the house's money. But to repeat, if you don't care and you just want the...
You want the safety, the feeling,
right,
the emotional wonderfulness of having a direct income that you know you can't screw up, fine.
That's it. That's it. So we'll take more of your phone calls when we come back. You said, in fact, sometimes the overriding factor on buying these particular annuities has to do with the emotional side, the psychological side. I have bought myself peace of mind. That's what they're saying. Okay, now, take more of your calls. Pierre, hold on. Clayton, Oklahoma, we'll get to your question. And we have a couple of lines open right now. 877-PLANNER. Trivia, calls, and emails still to come when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. You see the theme? This one they did right. This one Paul actually did right.
Yes.
Yes, all right. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Plum, taking your calls. Coming up tomorrow on this program, I've got a lot of things to talk about. In fact, over the next couple of days, I want to cover both the Bucket Strategy overview, and I also want to talk a little bit about managing market volatility. Those do kind of go hand in hand. You can't actually do anything about market volatility, but your reaction to it. How do you set up your portfolio? So we'll be sort of blending those two topics over the next couple of days between Professor Plum and Terry Keyes, who will also be in a couple of days. So stick around for that. 877-PLANNER, let's get back to the phones. We got Pierre up next in Clayton, Oklahoma. Hello, Pierre.
Hey, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
If you lose the signal, I'm in the mountains of Oklahoma, so I apologize for that.
Okay.
I have an annuity with USAA. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to be picking up on your program about annuities. And I don't know if you know anything about USAA.
I know a little bit about them. They're a very good company. They have competitive rates.
Does their annuities fall in line with what you're talking about, this longevity annuity?
Well, I don't know which annuity you bought. They have multiple different types. Typically, the ones I've seen, which by no means means I've seen them all, they're very good with their fixed annuities, where they have it's like a CD alternative. It's, you know, it's a guaranteed account that pays interest. And I have not seen one with a rider. It doesn't mean that they have it with the lifetime income. So tell me about the one that you have. Tell me what you know about the one you have.
It pays a guarantee. It doesn't go any lower than 2%.
Okay.
That's what I do know about it.
Okay, so it sounds like a fixed annuity, and it pays you interest every year, right?
I'm sorry?
It pays you interest every year.
Yes, sir, it does.
And the interest, do you know how much they're going to pay you in advance of the year, or is the interest determined by some movement of an index?
Oh, I see what you're saying. See, I don't know.
So, I mean, if you want, get the most recent statement and give us a call, and we can go through it and we can explain exactly what you have. From what I have seen, they're competitive annuities, and having a 2% worst-case scenario sounds reasonable if you bought it several years back. Do you know when you bought it?
Oh, I've had it for about 5, 6, 7 years now.
Yeah, it sounds about right. So you're probably either very close to or out of the surrender period. There's a surrender time where it says that you give us the money, we'll pay you interest, but if you try to take more than maybe 10% a year, we're going to ding you a little bit, you know, substantial penalty for early withdrawal. So at the end of the surrender period, what you have is a liquid 2%, you know, account. And right now, that's not bad.
Okay. So thank you very much for your time.
No
sure.
problem.
If you get some of that information, Pierre, we'll be happy to talk to you more about it. I thank you for the call. So in his case, it's not necessarily that bad. I mean, it's not bad at all.
Well, I don't know what he's using it for. It didn't sound like he expected a lot of growth out of it.
Which is good in this case.
It sounded like he liked the idea of the guarantees, and it was a fixed annuity. Now, whether or not it fits within what he's trying to accomplish, we didn't get into his needs. We just got into trying to decipher what he actually had.
Exactly. Okay, 877-PLANNER. We have time to get at least one more call in here before the top of the hour. That would leave us with Bruce in Las Vegas. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
All right. I got a 403B. When I die, how soon do my kids have to take the money out?
Well, they're supposed to start taking money out the year after the year you die. So they do have a required minimum distribution. Their required minimum distribution potentially starts the year after you die. Now, how old are you now?
Well, I'm 69. I know at 70 and a half, I got to start taking that out, but there'll be money left.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. And so there's a different set of rules if you die before you get to required minimum distribution age. They can stretch out the beneficiary IRA at that point. They would roll it to a beneficiary IRA. They can stretch the payments out as long as they start taking money out in the year after the year you die, and they follow the required minimum distribution rules. If, heaven forbid, something happened to you this year before you get to 70 and a half, before you get to the year you turn 70 and a half, then they have one other option. So if the owner of the IRA or 403B dies before they get to required minimum distribution year, then the beneficiaries have the ability to do nothing for up to 5 years, but by the end of the fifth year, they have to have taken all of the money out. So to have the stretch capability, they need to start the year after the year of death. And because it's very unlikely that you won't make it till your required minimum distribution age, that's going to be their choices. You're going to take it, and you're going to live on it for another 20 years, 30 years, and then you'll leave whatever's left to them, and they start taking it the following year.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot, then.
Okay.
All right, Bruce. Well, thank you.
And this assumes that Congress does not change the law on us like they're trying to do.
Yeah, so again, the rules on this, I mean, you have spousal heirs
and non-spousal heirs.
And non-spousal heirs. And the rules are different. Spousal heirs often can just continue on as if
well, they can just roll it into their own name.
Sure, or keep it in the decedent's name, whichever happens to work best for them. But there is, yes, there is there are rules for non-spousal beneficiaries of retirement accounts, 401ks, 403bs, IRAs.
And even though the non-spouse beneficiary may be younger, it is not, and it's a retirement account, it's not their retirement account. So, you know, that's why they're trying, and the Congress is saying, it's not their retirement account, so they should be taking the money out within the first 5 years, because it was somebody else's retirement account who didn't need it for retirement, so they want to be able to tax it a little bit sooner.
You're saying non-spouse beneficiaries.
Non-spouse beneficiaries.
Yes.
You know, spouse beneficiaries, it is technically their retirement account and because of the marriage. But, you know, non-spouse, it's not their retirement account. That's where they got the idea that non-spouse or non-spouse beneficiaries, beneficiary IRAs for non-spouses, are not creditor protected the same way an IRA is.
Because it's not theirs.
Because it's not their retirement account. Although you may be counting on it for your retirement, it's not your retirement account. It doesn't have the same creditor protection as your own IRA would have. And so they've looked at them in different forms. Is it your IRA? Or is it just money you inherited that doesn't carry the same same rules?
Currently, you can stretch out.
Currently.
Then there's a table that right. says how long.
There's a single life expectancy table.
Right. So but if you don't start taking money out, then it all becomes.
Right. If you as the beneficiary of the account, 401k, IRA, whatever the account is, if you don't start taking money out in the year after the year of death, then the stretch aspect of it is gone.
You're right. And at that point, you don't have to do anything at all, but by the end of 5 years.
That's only if the owner was under required minimum distribution.
Oh, that's right. And if they weren't, well, we don't have time to get into it.
They weren't, you get a penalty.
That's right. You have to take RMDs. Okay, we're out of time. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, and I mean Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, call them at the off-air number, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I am Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.